welcome to the Clydesdale Chronicle, where we focus on preserving the stories of the past, addressing the issues of today, and generating ideas for the future. Enjoy.
All right, this is Christy here with the Clydesdale Chronicle. We have just finished up our 2025 National Clydesdale Sale, and I am sitting down with co-chairs Andrew Stahlheim and Kelly Gardner, and I am sitting across from my auctioneering partner, Mr. Richard Yoder, and we are going to talk through some of the highlights, lowlights, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the 2025 National Sale. So I think I'm going to turn it over to the co-chairs. From your perspective, knowing what was supposed to happen, how this was supposed to go, how are you feeling about your sale?
I don't think you ever really know how it's supposed to go. We just can, as far as the horses selling, the best we can do is offer, get everything we can and be organized and then try to get the advertising and the people here. As far as the how everything went for the sale, we felt it run fairly smoothly. I think the live stream was good. I don't think we had any issues. I think maybe the sound one time, but I think we sold some horses online. I don't know the number, but there was several. So
it did feel like there was a few online. I do know we had an issue with like my mic in particular, not being able to hear me during the first part of the online part of the auction. But other than that, I don't know that, Richard, did we hear of any other issues?
No, I didn't hear of any issues, really. It was pretty smooth for the most part. They cut out once or twice a little bit, but come right back.
Yeah.
We did have, I would say we had good interest on the internet, had quite a few people signed up. We did sell a good amount of horses on the net, some good money. I think the top one was right around 30.
Yep.
A lot of help along the way. You know, they'd come in pretty strong between that 5 and 10, kind of help us get started.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know the feedback I had gotten was yesterday there was some folks that were just coming in and had turned on the live stream and actually could see everything. They could hear everything. There was no feedback, like the surround sound, right,
yeah,
of being at a horse sale. And the clarity was good, and there was no kind of cutting in and out. So if anything, you know, we improved from last year, it was probably the live stream.
Yeah, you changed live stream companies too, didn't you?
Correct.
Yeah, so we went through Willoughby Sales this year instead of, I think, Horse Auctions USA was last year's.
Yeah, and I will say, just being the person that was there for the preview, both the line preview and the riding and driving preview, especially the riding and driving preview, they really worked on all those angles during that riding and driving preview. I think they did a really good, very attentive on making sure to showcase every horse that came into that Coliseum. So I feel like from a consigner standpoint, that preview actually ended up being really well live streamed.
Yeah, and I don't know what the last numbers were, but I looked on Facebook and I think it was like 2,800 or 2,900 views on just the in-hand preview. So that's a good interest anyways.
That is. Do either of you know how many bidder numbers were handed out?
I'm not sure where you started, but we've seen up to 240s.
Yep.
And I think it's may have started at like 110 or maybe like 100, or because I know I had like 111.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in the 200s.
Okay. All right. So, any surprises in the sale? Anything from a horse?
I think the surprise that I was is how strong the gelding sold because of the quality and the number that we had. I think, and the 16 3-year-old geldings, and I think they all sold pretty fair. So.
Yeah, I would agree. The 3-year-old geldings were strong for being that many and 3 years old. I felt they were strong. I mean, 20,000 is not uncommon on a 3-year-old gelding today.
No, and I think the other thing from a consigner standpoint is that you could tell the consigners put in their homework. They put in their time on those young, even some 2-year-olds, a lot of broke single, broke double, broke to ride. I mean, you could tell everybody had put in their time on those young horses to really prove what their ability was. I think that helped with the sales amounts.
I felt like the condition and the quality was up this year quite a bit from last year, maybe even the previous year. I felt like it was really strong, just the quality and condition, and everything was, I thought, was up.
I think there was some concern because the low number amount when you first get a catalog and look through the catalog. But I think, you know, we had some drop, we had some ads, but overall the quality and like the numbers, they were pretty good today, right? I was in the back of the barn like running back and forth, but the little bit that you did kind of hear.
I would be curious to know the average, but the average should be strong today.
Yeah, I would say the gelding average is going to be probably between 15 and 20.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a few high sellers in there. Mm-hmm. Do we know what the high selling horse was yet?
65,000. 65, yeah. The gelding, yeah. And mm-hmm. then another gelding for 63.
Yeah. Okay.
And another one for 55, right?
55, yeah.
So we had some good ones. Was lot 101, the last one from Gary Miller, was that our high selling?
No.
Second.
Okay.
High selling.
Okay. Just know it was just, it was really nice to have such strong numbers so late in the sale at that time.
Yeah, so, and that's not the first time that Richards had one here that sold for 70, and he was uncatalogued horse that came in the end. So yeah. The high seller isn't going to matter if he's the first horse in or the last horse yeah. in. Like, he's going to be the high seller no matter what.
I agree with that. I've fitted a lot of horses, and it doesn't matter if you're first or last or in the middle. If you've got a good horse, he's going to sell no matter where he's at. And a lot of people get hung up on that, and I understand it can be, you know, if you're – you'd like to be in the middle, but we can't all be in the middle. If you do your homework and they're good, they will sell.
Yeah, and they might sell better in a certain situation for a certain horse, but there's no way to tell that in doing the lottery and stuff like that. And once again, like it's a random draw. Like that's the only fair way to do it. We don't try to manipulate it. It's everybody's name goes in a hat, and we just pull it out, and that's where you end up. So.
And I think that's important for people to know that transparency of there is no logic other than random drawing out of a hat for how the catalog even gets put together.
Yep, it was a hat at my house with the numbers yeah. in it, so and I'm pulling it out of the hat.
Technically, literally. Kelly's fault for the order we sold it.
So if any consigners are upset, it is just literally Kelly's fault.
515-360.
Steve Gregg did say he's never been number one in 35 years of selling here, and he's would like to not have to be number one again. I said, well, we could probably take care of that. So since you did.
His mare sold well, though.
Yeah,
she did. I felt like she did.
We're being number one, yeah.
She did, and we were talking earlier, like number one, we just know from the block, like we're going to have to spend a little more time. You got to get your bidders in there. They got to get set down. They got to get understanding that, oh my gosh, we're actually doing this, and get them all warmed up. So that's not uncommon.
With that being said, we got to take time, but I feel like if, from an auctioneer standpoint, if we stall on the first 10, we're going to drag the whole
yes.
sale.
So it's, and I do feel like we went on a really good clip today.
So I guess on that note, how did you feel like, because the Clyde sale is notorious for being slow selling compared to maybe some of your other sales. So how do you feel like they sold this year? Like, was it slower than normal? Was it a little quicker, or how do you think the pace went?
For me, overall, I feel like the pace went fairly quick because it just didn't feel like I had a lot of time between when I initially announced the horses, you getting into bidding, and then you always give a nod to me so like I get a second round. It just felt like you barely went, and then I'm going again. Yeah. Like
I felt like people were quick, but, you know, it's not even 2 o'clock yet, and we're done.
Yeah.
And we had, what, 80-some yet?
Yeah, probably total went through the ring probably about 77, I think, 76 yeah. maybe.
So, you know, if we could maybe push it a little harder.
Yeah.
Some of the sales we go to, by noon, they start at 8 o'clock, and at noon, they're around 100, 120 head. So our pace is not really that far behind. You know, the mindset of bidding slower, I think that's largely due to whoever's selling. They can set that pace. You know, when you guys quit, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and beg.
Yeah.
And I think if they figure that out, it doesn't take long. They're going to be on it.
Because
most people have a number in their head where they're going to stop and where they're done.
Yeah.
And just watching people walk around and look at their book, you know they have numbers of horses they're looking at. You have a number in your head. Mm-hmm. We just need to get them to raise their hands a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the getting them to break loose is the hardest challenge. Once they break loose, you can roll. Just to get that first bit in there.
Then sometimes they go above that number in their head. Because I saw that look on a couple of people's faces like, ooh, oops.
Yeah. There might have been a couple horses today that it started real quiet and there was some guy standing behind me going, how did we get here? Like, went really quick. Like, you got to get your hands out of your pockets.
So back to the consigning or picking your numbers. So this year was the first year that you gave the highest bidder the option to pick his number?
Yeah, so this year we did one, I guess we'll take it back. One person did get to pick their number. John Newell had the high seller last year, and he did get to pick where he wanted the horse. But that was the only one. And then we do not like to try to keep them, if you have multiple consignments, we do try to keep them separated by 10. Just to draw it out so it helps the consigner and everybody else.
I just, as for me, is, you know, just curious, just a thought. If you would give the high seller of the Yellings and the high seller of the mare and the high seller of the stallion, all three an option, you know, they could choose their spot if that would make everybody feel like they're on the same playing field, entice them to maybe, you know, consign.
Yeah.
I just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was just a gesture because, you know, the high seller, I mean, they might not have a horse next year. Right. But like, it just so happened that John Newell was the high seller and he high seller again this year. So, I mean, but the horse that he picked for number 20 wasn't even the high seller. So it was a different one. So it didn't even work out for him.
Yeah. And I was actually surprised myself. If I would have picked the number, I wouldn't have picked 20.
Yeah.
I'd have probably picked 40 or 50.
You would have went more in the middle. Where more the high the seller was. Right. Right. Note to John if he's listening.
You picked poorly.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd go that far, Christy. Yeah. Wow. But yeah, that's something we can take back to the committee. And you know, I know that a lot of people... especially you get to those higher numbers, you know, that is a lot of commission, but that is how we pay to have the sale here and be able to deliver a good product is to be able to, we have to have this money to spend. If we don't have to make a lot of money, but we do try to support the association through the sale. And if we're not making any money at the sale, then we're just doing it for free. So
yeah.
Right. And that's one thing, you know, a lot of the sales we run normally, they're owned by one individual. And this sale is run by an association. And I say hats off to everybody that volunteers, everybody that works, everybody that helps. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of different opinions. You know, if we can't work together, it ain't never going to work. But if we can keep working together, it can be a great sale. Like, we had a great sale today. I felt like we had probably a better, stronger sale today than we did last year, especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe the year prior, I'm not sure. But, you know, if everybody works together, we get these little glitches figured out, it'll be, yeah.
Yeah, and then on that note, like the sale, I think this year, money-wise, I think we probably brought in more than we did last year. And, like, the number of horses we had entered last year was, like, 125, and this year was 85. And next year, they'll probably be back to 125. So we're always a roller coaster on that, and we've talked in the past about limiting it to 100 head and hoping that would bring in entries faster and get people thinking about it, so that we're the entry process, like, if everything gets dragged out through the beginning of the process, it's harder to get the book out, it's harder, everything gets to be harder to manage. If we can get everybody to do things in a timely fashion, and I understand, I've entered a lot of horses and not known what I actually was going to bring by the end of January. So it's not an easy task, but
you still have the option to substitute, though. That's always been a thing. So if you enter early and you enter a horse and you're like, you know, that's maybe not the one I want to take, there's still a substitution process. So if you wanted, basically you're going in saying, I want one of your 100 slots.
Yeah. I don't think of limiting the numbers to, say, 100. I don't think that's a bad idea, because it seems like if people have the mindset that I want to be there, and I got to be in that 100, in that first 100 head, they're going to get there. Because I know we go to sales that are limited, so if we're going to take something there, we make sure and we get consigned, because we don't want to miss it.
Well, I think the key there is marketing. Like Kayla and I have talked, like the key to marketing is urgency, getting people to get a deadline, getting, because we need this deadline in order to market. We're going to market your horse. We're going to do all of these things, but there's got to be a sense of urgency. And there's something about limitation that really makes people move quickly.
Right. I agree with that, because there's sales that we go to every year, and every year it's early, I think, because sometimes I almost don't know, but they're calling me and saying, hey, what are you bringing? We need pictures. We want to advertise. If you're early, it's free advertising. You know, we're running an ad in the journal. We're running an ad here. You know, just push it. I would totally support that 100%.
Yeah, and then I don't know if that would help with the scratches. We've always seemed to have a large number of scratches. This year, for the amount of horses we had, I mean, we had 10, 12 scratches. I mean, a large number of scratches. And it always kind of seems to be that way. And I don't know if people, you know, obviously people have bad luck. You know, horses aren't fit to bring to the sale, which we don't have any problem. If your horse is not fit, we'd rather it not be here. You know, so it's hurt, lame, sick. We don't want you to bring it to the sale because that just makes issues. But like, I don't know if people are selling them before the sale or how that goes, which I don't blame anybody for that either. Right. A lot of people are making it. It's a business. So you got to make that business decision. But to get people to enter and commit and stay committed to that entry is, I mean, we're, you know, what, 20% scratch rate probably. So that, I think that just seems higher.
That is definitely higher from what I'm used to in the other breeds that we fit. I feel like, so there's auctions that we go to and we consign, and if we don't bring that horse, they want to know why. And if we say that horse died, they want to have a vet certificate saying, why did this horse die? Why did this horse not show up? They want to know, because it's owned by an individual. So if we don't bring that horse, it's costing him money. So he's protecting himself and forcing us to bring a vet certificate saying why this horse is not here, whether he's lame, whether he died, whether, you know. So I've always been surprised since I've consigned Clydes to the sale that how many people consign him then randomly just sell him. I'm like, dude, we just consigned this Clyde. You're going to buy it at the sale. I've had offers at home, and I say, no, we'll be at the sale. That's my personal feeling. Once I consign it, it's going.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the past, you know, like maybe holding them more accountable for not bringing them. And it gets hard on that, too, because, you know, I don't know, people get emotional about it.
Yeah, we talked about substitutes, but I'm also thinking if they scratch, they're not getting their money back.
No, they don't get their money
so
back.
So you are, so there's already a loss a little bit on there.
They got their consignment fee, but you didn't get your commission either.
Yeah.
No.
And it's probably back to it's not an individual sale owner. You're working it as a board, so there's nobody to say, hey, this is costing me a bunch of money. You can't be doing that.
Yeah.
It's more of a service, right? Like, it's a service to the Clyde breed is the way I look at it. Like, even at the end of the day, if all we're doing is breaking even, like, there's a lot of, like you said earlier, there's a lot of volunteers, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that go into this, and a lot of stress and everything else that we don't get a cent for. I mean, really, the most of us don't get a penny for all the work that we put in. But it is a service to the membership and to the Clydesdale community to have a place to go to sell their horses. Because there's been some other sales that sell Clydesdales, and it's hit or miss whether they do all right or not, or even get the numbers for enough people to show up. But the Clydesdale's been a staple for, I don't know, it's been going on for 50-some years now, and we're going to just try to continue to do it and do it the best we can. And every year is a challenge and different issues. And with the volunteers, I think that's the way you go. I mean, some years somebody doesn't, maybe drops the ball, or things, people change in and out and things are a little bit different. And it just, like you said, when you got the individual, like that person's doing it, like they do it every year. It's one person taking care of it. So.
Yeah, that definitely makes a difference. You know, the volunteer part of it is great. I love it. And if somebody is wanting to buy a Clyde, where are they going to go? The Nashville Clydesdale sale.
Yeah.
So my thoughts are, if you've got a Clyde, if you're a breeder, if you're a fitter, if you're whatever, this is the place to bring a Clyde.
Well, it's not only the place to just buy a Clyde, it's the place where you're going to start. Kayla and I, we've talked to lots of people. It's all about the relationships. Like, you need a Clyde, but you kind of need a support network to go with it. You know, who you're going to call when something goes wrong. If this is your first endeavor into draft horses and you're choosing a Clyde, you need to have a few people, because there's some unique issues with a Clyde that you're not going to see in some of the other breeds. So you need, the beautiful thing about this is it's the camaraderie and the ability to create relationships on top of buying that horse.
I totally agree with that. I feel like us kind of being new in the Clyde world, I feel like our friendship in the Clyde world is great. Like, the people are so nice. It is so much fun. And it's great. Like, people help each other. They're friends. It's great. And some of the other breeds, we don't feel that. Like, if I don't have something they need, they don't talk to me. And I appreciate that about the Clyde breed. It's like this, the family ties in the Clyde world is way bigger than most other breeds are.
So we have the volunteers that were kind of getting the horses up. But I think the other thing that we saw from the block, at least I did, is the number of individuals that you knew who didn't have a horse here, or it wasn't their horse, but just the number of people that came in to make sure that that horse could get run, the switching out of handlers. There's just this big group that's going to make sure that every horse gets in there, it gets run. It's not even just the people on the street getting the horse up there, but there's another big network that is just making sure, and they're just stepping up in the moment to make sure that this is all running really smooth. And I think that's part of our timing issue even, is just making sure we have enough people to get out there so we can keep displaying the horse properly, so we keep getting the bids in.
Yeah, I figured they were trying to get their steps in.
Well, I feel like a few of them got steps for all of us today.
Well, right.
Well, my hat's definitely off to the people that were helping getting the driving horses down, getting them in, getting them lined up, same way with the sale today, walking the barn, making sure the next horse is getting ready, getting out. That's huge, because a lot of sales we go to, they don't do that. You got to listen to the mic, and if you don't listen, you miss, you know. So I think it's a great team effort, and I love it.
That would be hats off to Kelly, to Kale, to Katie Bowder. Who else was helping you? Was it just the three of you out there?
It was us three.
So today. Three people who were, like, in that preview, riding and driving was, what, 2.5 hours? That's 2.5 hours of pushing horses up there, mm-hmm. making sure we have something in the ring. Because the thing we're struggling with is, we know you in the barn have, like, Richard, you have, like, 5 horses. You got to come back. You got to swap it out. But we're also looking at it from the live stream going, we got to have to constantly have something in the ring. So trying to balance that.
Right.
It could have maybe went a little bit better. I think we have to look at it. We're going to do a 2-hour preview. I think we got to put a little more pressure, not on you necessarily, Richard, but just getting people to say, again, it's that sense of urgency. You got to get this done in 2 hours for the number of horses.
I think that's all the longer you have people sitting there wanting to watch it.
I felt bad.
They don't want to sit there for 4 hours to watch the riding and driving. Like, they want it condensed. They want to see them all. If it could be an hour, they would love it. Because then they're only sitting there watching it, and then they can go do whatever else they want or look at them or whatever, which we understand. We're not going to do it in an hour. But we do need to try to get it a little more condensed. And just and I know some of the consigners might think we're being pushy to try to get them here, get them there. You know, they feel like maybe we're trying to rush them. But I think it's more for the bidders is why we're trying to keep it condensed. It's not – and we're actually trying to help the consigners because – more people will be there to see it.
Being the person,
you gotta have the crowd.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like going to a movie, right? Like 2 hours, 3 hours is probably too long. But at the same time, speaking from back here at the barn, these cats in the barn are also kind of busting their tail because not everybody brings something to hook to. So there's a lot of, even from my standpoint, gonna be honest, if there's something empty sitting on the street, I'm gonna go, this is here.
Yeah.
This. Right. So we're trying to get that to keep that going a little bit. And there have been some suggestions on how maybe to keep that moving, like time slots, like Gordyville, right? Has like some sign up sheets.
They do have sign up sheets, but those sign up sheets are hard to follow.
Well, in that defense, we did try that a couple years ago, and the folks that signed up didn't show up at the time that they signed
up. Then we ended up. Right. But sitting in the arena, making sure that every spectator knows exactly which horses are in the arena and everything. It is hard to watch knowing that, okay, there's a couple good horses coming and I'm watching the people leave the arena. Like, there's a couple good ones coming and I can't even like corral you and tell you that you need to stay in here. Yeah.
That's, and part of that might be due to the facilities we have. Like if we could drive closer in the barn area, that would probably change that somewhat. Mm-hmm. But that's not an option here. And I like the driving arena. What I like about this setup as a fitter is I can hook my horses to the barn. I can walk them to the arena. By the time I get there, they're warmed up. They're ready to go.
Yep.
Some of the other sales we go to, we hook up, and in 20 or 50 feet, we're in the arena, and we've got to be performing. So I like this myself, but I understand it's a little bit stretched out for the rest of the people. But as long as we have a little bit of something in the ring, they'll stay there.
I will say the other really nice thing, and I don't know if it was anything that you guys had to do with, but there was a really nice food vendor right outside the Coliseum, which I think also helped people just sit there and stay because they had something to eat at the same time. Pretty sure we might have stole food from the cat show, but
no, they try to have. I think then there's a horse show and there's some other things going on in the fairground. So I think whenever there's something going on, that vendor is open. But, and that's why we do try to give them, like this year we had an hour and a half break between the halter and the driving, which doesn't seem like very long for the consigners, but for the
bidders,
they can get something to eat and then make their way up there and hopefully be seated by the time we start pushing horses through there.
Yep. So.
Well, one thing we got to keep in mind, this is a Budweiser crowd. They want to get done so they got time to kick back and relax and drink a beer.
Are
you talking about the consigners or the bitters or both?
I'm talking about everybody.
There's probably a few empty Budweiser bottles around. And that's part of the Clydesdale, right? The camaraderie of it. I think it's more of another get-together outside of your show season.
It's literally a family reunion.
Yeah, you can literally tell at the banquet when you, like, literally, there's no microphone that'll work for that crowd in the banquet.
Right.
So. Yeah. Oh, so you talk about venue. I think the big question is the sale going to continue to be at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, or is the association going to potentially open it up to see if there's other options as well? I mean, we've had it here for probably every year since COVID, I think.
Yeah, 2021.
Yep.
We always want to get bids and options so that we are financially sitting in the right spot. So, but we do. I think we are going to get some bids and just see where we're at going forward. But it is one of the cheaper facilities, and there is some nostalgia from having it here in the years that it's been here. So
yeah. Well, Richard, you've been to other sales, other places. I traveled around. Any other locations that you're like, I think this would be a good one, or anything you'd recommend that the association even say, hey, let's take a bid? Because I agree with you. There's a nostalgia, but there's a fiscal responsibility we have to the association too.
I don't know if it's as, it doesn't really, to me, it's not as much about the facility as people get accustomed to an area and they like that. I've been to sales, like, especially during COVID, some of these sales they had to have it in different places, different areas, and it just messed up the whole sale. Myself, this is a great facility. I think, personally myself, always have it here. I would be great with that. I think moving it, you got a different area, you got different ways of doing it. It just brings a lot of changes every time you move it somewhere.
Yeah, people can, you get into a routine, and you kind of like your routine.
Yeah, people like a routine. They like to know what's coming next, you know, how we've always done it, basically.
Yeah, I think with that, like, if we do move it, and when we have moved it, like, that first year, like, there's just uncertainty. So the consigners seem to take them a little longer to come in, because they don't know how it's gonna go. Like, do they want to consign? Do they not? They want to see how it goes the first year. So I think that is a downfall of moving the sale. So.
I would agree with that.
Kelly, you got some thoughts?
I've seen it in a couple different places, right?
Yep.
Over the years, like, started here. I haven't been like Clydesdales my entire lifetime, but it just, this seems to be kind of the nostalgic place, right? You know, that you can go to the Schnucks grocery store right up the road, right? You can go to the this, that, and the other thing is all fairly close. The hotels are close. It's just, it's pretty handy.
Okay. Anything that, for the two of you as co-chairs, anything that you're walking away with going, before next year, we have to address this issue, or we need a volunteer that's going to help with this. Like, what's, what are you walking away with going, here's the things that I think we need to fix, address, shore up before the next sale?
I think every year here, the biggest drawback is sound and the banquet, especially. There's not much we can do for sound in the arena. We did try to do a bid board this year, but it didn't work out. So we'll put that back on the drawing board and hopefully have that up and running for next year. But that seems to be the one that we're always kind of missing the nail on that one. But back in the day, we'd have 150 people at the banquet, and now there's 400. So it just, with the larger number, we love that, but it just makes it more difficult to try to get the sound right. And then, you know, your free Budweiser and food and people, like you said, the family reunion. So it's just hard to get them to quiet down, even if the sound is good. So I don't know how loud we'd have to have it to drown everybody out. So.
So there's been some, you know, suggestions on kind of maybe some things that you can fix, or maybe a different way to do X, Y, and Z, right? Like from going into the ring, coming out of the ring, do this, do that. You know, we heard even from like a preview standpoint, it felt like we were pushing these poor people a little bit, like being back in the barn. Like these guys were busting their tails trying to get up there, and it seemed like maybe there's some adjustments we can do that way.
Yeah.
And also give the folks the opportunity, not saying that you'd open up the ring and let them come in because then all these hands go, which may or may not be a good thing, but maybe just some things you can address that way.
But, well, I just think even with the preview, like it went fast, and I think people didn't know like how many times up and back do you go. Everyone wrote something a little bit different. I had some people leaving while I was still talking about their horse. I had others where it's like they had to take another lap and there's silence. So it's even kind of figuring out a consistency maybe in that pattern, so we have a little more specific timing horse per horse,
right,
with it. That might alleviate some of the stress back in the barn. Because you could kind of time it out.
Yeah, and I think that would, you know, this year again, right? It's different from year to year. You can't keep changing everything every year to accommodate every issue that may or may not come up or somebody's preference, but you try and make it so that it helps everybody at the end of the day. But maybe just some adjustments there, right?
Yeah.
To give the folks in the crowd, right? Because you're doing it to give the potential buyers the opportunity to look at the horses in the ring, up front, up close, versus trying to walk through the barn and find them through all the stalls.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, we've talked about this. This is done with a lot of volunteers. And I've worked on a lot of different committees through other organizations. I am just wondering, you know, have you ever thought of like a sign-up genius or something where, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to probably have listeners who are like, yeah, I'd love to volunteer. I'd love to do something, but I don't even know what I could do. Have we ever thought of like a call to volunteers and here's the different things you could do? Because I know we're always tapping on each other and we're tapping on the people that we know, but how do we bring in some new volunteers?
Well, and I think that's part of it, even from the, so if you think about the Clydesdale Association, you've got all of these committees, right? But you've got committees that people come or they don't come, right? Which is fine, but kind of take a...
But maybe I don't want to be on the sale committee, but I'd like to...
Fill the coffee pot.
Yeah, I'd like to help with, like you said, the coffee and the donuts, or maybe I'd wear a mic and help horses get to the arena, or maybe I just want to run the youth board or the All-American or something. you know, we have lots of displays around. There's different things. How do we start to get more members to say, we'll set it up, but can you help us monitor this?
Well, and part of it is if you want to do that, Andrew's got a phone number. I think he still checks it. But
I feel like it's always full when I call it.
Right. But or
it's gonna be turned off for a while after this.
Right. No.
So I'm gonna start sending SOS signals from my house the next time I need it.
I need a break.
But you know, for instance, it was somebody wanted to sponsor the hospitality.
Yeah.
So they had called, I think it was Katie. Katie gave them their number. I reached out to them, right? I had somebody on that been here for years, just sent me a message saying, hey, I'm planning on doing this. Fantastic. So when in doubt, like reach out to any board member, right? Say I'm interested in doing this, right? They'll get it to where it needs to go, right? All of our phone numbers are out there. Just all you got to do is reach out.
Did you hear
that?
Yeah,
don't be offended if we don't ask somebody to do something. It's more the opposite way. If you want to help or have the ability to help or the time to help, You need to reach out to us or a board member or somebody else, because we don't always, in the planning and stuff process, it's just trying to get things done. You don't necessarily think of who can help you until you absolutely have to, and then you do rely on your friends or family.
Kale.
And they get drug into that. Kale gets drug into it a time
he
or
does.
Two. So.
Just so the listeners know, he's just standing here watching us. This is probably the hardest for him, just to stand there without a mic.
He can't say anything.
He's like smiling ear to ear. He's got so many words. Oh, Richard, as the auctioneer, any last thoughts before we kind of wrap this up?
I feel like from an auctioneer standpoint, as far as the day of the sale goes, I think it's very well covered. I think, you know, the horses come up to the ring and great, we don't ever have to wait on a horse, and that's huge. Like we talked about the preview and the driving, waiting on that, but one thing worse than waiting on a driving preview or just a regular preview is waiting at the auction ring, because if you don't have momentum, you lose everything.
Yeah.
And once you get your momentum going, you need to keep that. So getting the horses there is a big thing. There's no wait, there's no delay. Even when we do the raffles, it's quick, it's right there, we're done, it's over with. And I feel like from an auctioneer standpoint, you know, I feel like we have that area, I feel like, is well covered.
Yeah, and I feel like you've brought in a really good crew. Like, I think the group that runs the auction ring and the individuals in the ring themselves, like, that group is really starting to gel. Some of them have been here for a long time, but... Right. Over the last couple of years, since we've kind of made some transitions, that group is really gelling.
Yeah, those guys, they work together. And the big thing is, from an auctioneer standpoint, if you've got bid spotters, they have to listen to you. When you say their name, they have to know if they're in or they're out. And these guys all listen very well. Like, you can say their name, and they'll look at you like, am I in or am I out? You know, they'll try to follow where you're at. And if you have an auction where you've got bid spotters that don't listen to you, it can turn into a nightmare.
I know, but we have some of the most animated bid spotters. Well, I feel like they just rile up that group.
And you know, half of it's a little bit like leading a horse. So everybody looks at the leader like, hey, he's making that horse perform. The whip person has got a lot to do with it. And that is no different than from an auctioneer standpoint. If you've got good bid spotters, he's doing half of the auction, making the auctioneer look good, when it's actually the bid spotter that's doing the work.
Well, half the time you just want to raise your hand just so that they go wild again.
Right.
I want
right.
to see how high a couple of them guys can jump.
Yeah.
And they're getting up there in age.
So,
man.
From an auctioneer standpoint, I love the crew we have. I think every one of them is great. They do a great job. They're enthused, and enthusiasm is, that's the key to an auction. If we get motivation and enthusiasm, we're going to have an auction. Because 9 times out of 10, a lot of people, if you would walk through the barn tonight and ask them, I think they probably overbid what they initially had wanted to pay. And from an auctioneer standpoint, that's my job.
Yes.
Push them one more time.
I don't think you pushed them. I think it was Melton over there pushing hard in that corner.
He was working today.
And that being said, this is your third auction here, and this is the exact same crew except for Jaron come in this year to do the backup auctioneering, but as far as the bid getters and stuff, like the ring men, they are they're the same crew for the last 3 years, and
right.
we're hoping yeah. we do love them. They do a wonderful job, and we hope we can get them all back together right. again. Get the gang back together again for one more round next year.
The band, so that's a commitment, right, Richard? You'll be yeah, here next
I,
year.
I feel like he's
I'm just
going
to ask you. Like, we might as well take care of that right now. Just.
I'm looking at him going, I jump, you jump, buddy. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. We might have to just do that. We might need to talk when we don't have our headphones on.
Yeah, we'll let the dust settle for a month, and then we'll be right back to the planning process yeah. for next year. Yep. So
because I feel like you got contracts and different things you got to get going this next month.
Yeah, that's how fast it goes. I mean, there's a lull, and then January will be here before we know it. Yeah.
So with Easter falling last weekend, I know that kind of pushed back the sale, kind of threw off a few things. Are you looking at maybe trying to get back to that third weekend and get pushed back up?
No, I think we'll probably kind of stay where we're at, probably. I guess we'll see the calendar, and then we'll get a guarantee on that. And then it all depends on the availability of the location. So
how soon, like, just sense of urgency, getting things on their calendar, what's your goal for getting out the dates for the 2026 sale?
We should have them out next month.
Okay. Sounds good.
I would agree. Yep. Quicker the better.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I think that's also helping rope in the crew and different things. If we
can get it is, yeah, because if, from an auctioneer standpoint and a bid spotter's, there's sales I go to that I'm just a bid spotter as well, not the auctioneer. But I've got sales that I've got booked out. They give me a list for the complete year. Like, they might have 6 sales in 1 year, so I get the complete list, so I know every day that they're having an auction and I need to be there.
Yeah, and you're missing one right now.
I'm missing one today. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you do better here today, or did you? Well, did when you're sad that you missed that
it's
one?
Okay. It's for the love of the Clyde family. That's why I'm here.
We really do suck them in. It's the love of the Clydesdale.
It grows on you. I'm not gonna lie.
You're gonna have to change that to Progressive Clydesdales before long here, I think.
Well, yeah, because did you ever think you would ever say those words?
No, there's a lot of people look at me like, are you serious? Yeah, but it does grow on you.
I do got it by good faith. You are in the Clyde breeding business, too. So.
I feel like Andrew set you up. Yeah. This is how we hook him for life. Let's sell him a mare.
Yeah, there you go. And by the way, she had a great filly.
So, yeah, she probably would have did very well here, too.
Oh, well, thank you, Kelly and Andrew, for both co-chairing the committee. I know this is probably one of the biggest committees with the biggest responsibility. And I know from Richard's and I's standpoint, just having to stand up there and kind of make things run from the ring, we really appreciate everything that you've done and everything that you set together. So
you're very welcome. But one question, how did the radios work?
Okay, so the radio... works nice when Richard's not like bellering in my ear up there. Like, he's so loud that I'm like, Kale can't yell loud enough in that radio to get my attention.
So that being said, we talked earlier a little bit about the live streaming not being able to pick you up, Christy.
Yep.
So I think ideally if we had a bigger block and I would be sitting on one side of the live feed, and you would be on the other side of the live feed.
So I'm closer to you yelling at me?
No. So the live feed would be between us.
Oh, okay.
That way they could pick you up better.
Oh.
And pick me up as well.
So you want a buffer. Not just this 2x4. You want an actual human buffer in between.
Like a buffer. There you go. I just think that the live feed would pick it up better.
Yeah. I think you're right.
But I don't know if that's a possibility at this facility is to have a bigger, better block. I don't.
Yeah, I would assume that is the block. So,
yeah, I think we're kind of stuck with that.
If they do have something different, that's
I mean, we talk about volunteers. Somebody can build a block and bring one in every year. I mean, yeah.
I feel like Kale can because he made this table.
There you go.
This is a union facility, so I don't know if they would allow us to do that or not. Yeah. We could, yeah.
So it'd be like somebody's going to be in a sidecar attached to the block.
I thought that's what you were in.
I feel like that's what I mean. It's more like a cage without the
We
top.
Could move you to the other side.
Yeah, we could.
Put the block.
Yeah. That could possibly work.
That could possibly work too. Like, you could set it up. I mean, and all joking aside, we could really reset.
Yeah, actually, you could do that. You could set the block where myself and the live streamer on. You could actually set that to the left and bring the block where you're in to the right. That would actually do the trick.
Yeah.
And he'd still have a buffer. And a 2x4. And he'd get all the protection.
And the wall.
And the wall. He's got all the protection. Oh, well, again, thank you both, for all three of you, for sitting down and just debriefing this and letting our listeners kind of see what all happens behind the scenes. And I'm hoping out of this podcast in general that you're going to get a few more phone calls of people who want to step up and volunteer for next year's sale. Because I'm going to say, from my standpoint, it is fun.
Yeah, it definitely is fun.
So, all right. Well, thank you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yep.
We would like to say a special thanks to all of our buyers, bidders, and consigners, and especially our volunteers of the 2025 National Clydesdale Sale. Also, a reminder that all horses purchased the last 3 years at the National Clydesdale Sale are eligible for the following classes: male halter, female halter, hitch cart, pleasure cart, English riding, and Western riding. Please look in the 2025 World Clydesdale Show entry book for more information. Thanks again.